With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The April decline in the barometer was driven primarily by a drop in producers' views of current conditions, which fell 11 points. Meanwhile, expectations for the future declined modestly, but remained significantly lower than a year ago, down 28 points from April 2025.
It's Dr. Michael Langemeyer, Director for Purdue's Center for Commercial Agriculture, on the latest Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. As it fell from 127 to 121 in April, sharpest drop coming in producers' view of current conditions. Now, that index fell 11 points, but producers have also become more cautious about their own operations. Only 15% said their farm's better off than a year ago, and more expected worse financial performance over the next 12 months. China's state-owned food company, COFCO, plans to more than double soybean capacity, crushing capacity, at a plant in Brazil. It's adding another major piece to the global race for soy processing. Dr. Fred Gehl is a retired USDA economist, but says the project shows how Brazil, China, and the U.S. are all pushing to capture more value through crush rather than raw bean exports. The expansion would raise the plant's capacity from 4,500 metric tons per day to about 10,000. Annual processing capacity would reach 1.35 million metric tons. Output, including soy bean oil, soy meal, and about 350,000 metric tons of biodiesel. Location is important, as this plant would sit in Brazil's west central soybean region, connected by rail to the Santos port, where COFCO is also expanding shipping capacity. Project aims to improve control over product flows, add export value, reduce pressure on harvest season logistics. Now, Gehl notes that the move comes as Brazil's overall crush capacity continues to rise. And at the same time, China already has excess crush capacity and weak margins, which could make additional soy oil and meal competition harder on existing processors. Broader takeaway, though, is that soybean competition shifting beyond production and exports. Possible Justice Department settlement with Agristats could become the administration's first concrete enforcement move in a broader campaign against concentration across meat and protein markets. Reuters reports Department of Justice plans to settle its case against Agristats, a data company accused of enabling anti-competitive practices in the chicken, pork, and turkey industries through weekly benchmarking reports. Though Agristats is not a meat packer, the case centers on whether information sharing tools helped highly concentrated protein companies align behavior in ways that affected prices and supply. Reuters reports that Agristats denies the allegations and argues that its services actually lowers prices. Settlement would not resolve the beef probe, but it could show Washington moving from rhetoric to action. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
One of the things that could have made this global situation worse because of the Strait of Hormuz is Australia. Their demand has been down substantially because of the lack of rains.
Josh Linville is vice president of fertilizer with StoneX.
Farmers went through a good phosphate run. Everything was okay. Well, all of a sudden, the rains haven't come. The conditions haven't improved. And a lot of farmers are scaling back and saying, you know what? I don't need to put on this urea. I don't need to do this investment because if I'm not going to get rain, I can't grow a crop. What's the point of putting the inputs on it? And so when you look at their imports, again, we're tracking vessels here, so it's not an exact science, but based on what we see versus what the three-year average are, they are way, way behind. And this is something that worries me. And so if anybody's listening from Australia on this, if you haven't already purchased and applied your urea, I'm not sitting there saying, run out and buy every single ton you can get your hands on. I'm absolutely not saying that. But I do want to point out, if the rains come, if the meteorologists start to put out long-range forecasts and start to become wet very soon, and hey, weird things have happened in the world, right? We have seen forecasts change before. If you start to see it, there is going to be a rush on getting the supplies that are there. That's quickly going to run out. All of a sudden, now the importers have got to figure it out. Where am I going to get resupply from? I got to get more tons coming here. Well, Asia is sitting pretty tight. China isn't exporting. And India just locked up 1 million tons for East Coast ports. They soaked up a lot of the tons that are out there. Okay, next place, Middle East. Strait of Hormuz is closed. That place is very tight. Now you got to start going to places like North Africa. Well, Egypt just put a $90 a ton export tariff on their exports.
Yeah,
that's going to make that situation. It's all to sit there and say the importers are having to go further away. That's more expense. That is more sale time. And so if we see this situation, we're going to go from a position where it is dead, 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 rain in the forecast. Everybody in the world in Australia becomes a buyer and there's not enough product to go around. So have those conversations sooner than later. Be on the front foot in case this thing does turn. I hope it happens, but I'm afraid of what that urea demand looks like after the fact.
What about anhydrous?
People might be sitting there saying $50 a ton move higher, $825, and that's too low. And it is. When you look at all the problems around the world with anhydrous, the price ought to be higher. You look at the lack of Russian exports. They're normally your biggest exporter, and they're just, they haven't been there since 21. European production is still low. Trinidad production issues. Strait of Hormuz is closing three of the major exporters. Strait of Hormuz is closing all of the LNG exports. Anhydrous has got a lot of problems around the world. And there's a lot of signs pointing that this price should have been higher. But the Tampa price is interesting. We spend a lot of time talking about it every month, but it's really only agreement between two companies. It's Mosaic and Yara. It's this longstanding price negotiation every month. Yara feeds anhydrous to Mosaic, who uses it for phosphate production. Well, my guess is Yara probably sat there and said, this price ought to be higher. But if we go too high, too fast, Mosaic may not buy as much. Their production rates might start to fall because their production rate on phosphate is incredibly high. And as high as the price of phosphate is here in North America, it still isn't something that's worth where their production cost is. So from Yara's point of view, they may have sat there and looked at the price and said, you know what? Yes, we should be getting more margin. But at the end of the day, we still want full demand. I'd rather sell a lower price and full tonnages than a higher price and less tonnages. So it still points the right direction, right? It's still pointing higher. It's still showing all the problems around the world. We just expected that price would be up a little bit more, but you might have seen politics, human emotion play a part in this one.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
The effects and the impact of climate change are real.
Interesting exchange between Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro and the administrator of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, in an appropriation subcommittee hearing.
You probably did see the report on Antarctica and the glaciers and melting and all this. It was an extraordinary documentary over this past weekend. This is an administration that is hell-bent, in my view, on ignoring science. Just 2 weeks ago, you reportedly attended a climate deniers conference. And in your remarks, you said, quote, "For those who wanted to criticize my appearance here before this group, it really shows the desperation of just how many walls have collapsed of this last line of defense," end quote. In Connecticut, we have seen increasing heat waves, extreme precipitation, devastating floods, impacting everything, farming, school closures, damaging homes and businesses. Climate change is harming our health and our environment, but is also harming Americans financially. This administration, however, is running the playbook on making the problem worse, focusing on policies that are handouts to the fossil fuel companies, like reversing the 2009 greenhouse gas endangerment finding, rolling back fuel emission standards for motor vehicles, and reducing methane leak monitoring requirements. The budget proposal reads like a climate change deniers manifesto. When climate change is flooding our streets, poisoning our air, driving up health care and disaster costs, how can the EPA justify abandoning that duty to protect Americans to appease polluters under the false flag of economic growth?
Following the law, Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, where does it say anything about fighting global climate change? Loper Bright, Supreme Court case. You familiar with it?
No, I maybe others are. I'm not, but let me ask.
But that's really important. As a member of Congress, Loper Bright says that we as an agency don't have the authority to get creative. If Section 202 of the Clean Air Act.
No, but you don't have, excuse me, you do not have the right to say climate change does not exist, that it's a hoax, and that's where this administration is coming from.
I understand you're upset that you don't know what Loper Bright is. Do you know what the major policies doctrine is?
I'm upset because.
You know what the major policies doctrine is?
You know what, let me just.
You're a member of Congress. You should know.
Well, you have moved from someone who defended the environment to all of a sudden
being very defensive about not knowing the two biggest landmark Supreme Court cases of the last year with regards to your question.
You are very defensive about changing your policy and your positions with regard to the environment.
Okay.
Now, you just tell
me. You want
me
to tell you what the two biggest Supreme Court cases are of the last few years?
This is what I want you
Michigan
to tell me.
Michigan versus EPA.
Whoa.
West Virginia versus EPA.
You know, you're here because you need money from us. So halt for the second. And wait for the questions and answer the questions.
Well, I answered your question.
No, you didn't.
And you didn't like my answer because you don't know what Loper Bright is, because you don't know what the major policies doctrine is.
Chairman,
because you're asking me
questions.
You're asking me about Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, and you don't read it. You don't know what it says.
Listen, and what you want to do is to deny you want
no,
to.
No, I actually read the law. I do my homework.
Really?
You're just somebody who likes to have the microphone on. You know what I have to do? I read the law.
No,
I read
Chairman,
the Supreme Court cases.
I don't have to listen to this, and I would say
no.
This,
you, what you should do for your constituents is actually read statute.
This budget is at real risk.
Read
Let
your Supreme
you.
Court.
This is the Appropriations Committee.
Oh, you're,
you
you're
come
gonna,
here.
You care about
you
science. Now you're threatening to defund it.
Oh my God! No, you don't fund
because
science.
You don't know what Loper Bright is. Because
deniers.
You don't know what the major policies
you
doctrine is. Your
deniers.
Message to our folks at the EPA is that you want to defund us.
I don't have to listen to this BS.
The BS. You think I made up these cases?
Yeah, I think you have made up a whole
I made up Loper Bright. I made up West Virginia versus EPA. I made up Michigan versus EPA.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Whenever a new topic becomes popular, becomes something everybody wants to talk about, you get these people coming out of the woodworks and starting to talk about it.
Josh Linville is Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX.
How do you build a brand? Well, when you watch the news, your viewership doesn't come from, you know, happy stories. It comes from the devastation, from the accidents, things like that. And so that's what's really being pushed is, oh my gosh, there's shortages. Oh my gosh, there's not enough to go around. And I'm talking about just North America here. And I'm not going to sit here and say that everything is out of the woods. We've still got a few more weeks to go for peak demand for side dress. Mm-hmm. But I think we can kind of calm down some of the fear mongering that we're seeing out in the marketplace.
Okay.
We look at potash. Listen, potash season is largely done. Most of that potash imports that we have in the U.S. market, for example, comes from Canada. And so we're sitting good there. That season's largely done. No problems.
Okay.
Phosphate, a lot of problems globally, right? But again, we produce a lot of what we need for North America. And everybody we've talked to across the nation, across Canada, nobody's really talked about outages. Yeah, it might be slow getting product in. Yeah, it might be expensive, but no outages. Mm-hmm. Most of the anhydrous that we need is produced here. Most of the UAN that's produced is that we need is produced here. Urea has been the one that we've been watching the closest because we need to import a little bit over 5 million ton. Mm-hmm. When we run our demand model and we're using 95.3 million acres of corn, we need about 5.1 million ton. You go through what our production has been, which has been solid based on what we thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. You look at the imports that we know from the Commerce Department through February. You look at what we think we know for vessels coming in for the months of March, April, May. And then June is kind of a toss month. It's more of a summer fill than it is a spring month. We're sitting right at 5.1.
Yeah.
Everything is sitting okay. We think that North America, the product is either here or on its way. Now, just because we sit there and say it's here, that doesn't mean it's going to be at the right place at the right time. The market still needs to move the product into the system. That means we're going to talk about a little bit of a different basis situation. A lot of just-in-time demand is going to find out what just-in-time logistics look like. But again, you made a great point. There is a big, big difference between affordability and availability. Availability is there. Affordability, nothing is affordable today, not with the prices where they are, but the product is around if we're willing to pay the price.
Now, could the market be underestimating anything?
I think it might be underestimating how quiet things can get this summer. Mm. We have been going, we're now, 10 and a half weeks into the Strait of Hormuz being closed. And it has been an adrenaline junkie's dream. It's one of those things where we've just been going so hard, so long, so fast. You know, you're getting up early, you're staying up late, you check your phone first thing in the morning, the last thing before you go to bed. We've got to remember, we've got summer coming up here very, very soon. You know, North American market, we're getting ready to, you know, go on the side dress. We just finished planting a family farm here over the weekend.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to shift to that last demand period. We might have forgotten just how quiet the market can be. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it from a supply standpoint, buyers around the world are going to sit there and say, no, thanks. I don't want anything to do with it. Not that early, not that price. No, thank you. And the suppliers are going to sit there and give you all the reasons why you should buy it. And listen, both sides can be absolutely right. And that's why we're afraid of the stalemate this summer. This market could get so quiet. I don't know if the market's anticipating what it could be like. And I think that can make a lot of people nervous out there. We struggle as a market when things get slow.
Yeah.
We really, really struggle. We don't know what to do. We're always nervous. We're scared. We're missing something. I think the market better get settled because this summer could be one of the slowest periods we've ever seen.
Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
As of January 1st of this year, we have about 86.2 million head of cattle and calves in America. That is the lowest since the 1950s, and this year we're looking to be slightly down again.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
In the past decade alone, we've lost over 17% of our cattle ranchers. More than 100,000 ranches across this country are no more. The low herd size inherited by the Trump administration can be attributed to a variety of factors. The biggest one, at least from our perspective, is the radical left's ongoing assault against ranching as a way of life. For years, they used climate alarmism to wage a war on cattle in America, and when you pair that with droughts, wildfire, overregulation from previous administrations, and volatile markets, this is how we have ended up here today. Growing the herd size is an immediate problem in need of solutions, and we've already begun implementing across the government and into the states how we're going to solve for that. And we'll talk more about that as we move through the week. But already on the grazing allotments, we've opened up millions of acres in the West. We unveiled our new product of the USA, which is catching like fire across the country. In a good way, labeling meat and poultry and egg products as the actually born, raised, harvested, and processed in America, which is a new rule. Expanding the grading pilot program to include 88 facilities in 32 states. That's smaller processors. Reducing holiday and overtime inspection fees for small processors. Of course, encouraging our child nutrition programs. You all have heard me say over and over, USDA spends $400 million every day on 16 nutrition programs. Incentivizing those programs to purchase locally grown, processed, harvested beef. And then, of course, Bobby Kennedy and I with our new dietary guidelines underscoring the importance of meat, among other actions, in eating real food. So we are making big change to keep incentivizing the growth of our cattle herd and to get out of this current situation we're in.
She was speaking recently at a Department of Justice event. So when can consumers expect results?
You know, being at a 75-year herd low, being at this point in the market, taken in total with, as I mentioned, the last administration moving cattle, doing everything they could to basically eviscerate the cattle industry, whether that was through grazing allotments or climate change, hoax, craziness, whatever it was. On top of that, you have the droughts. You know, even in Nebraska, the fire they just had was in rural Nebraska, so it didn't get as much press as a lot of these wildfires do. But it was the biggest fire in Nebraska history, the ninth largest in American history, and we're not really talking about it because it was in rural America, but what that does to those ranchers. So all of that taken in total, combined with obviously the screw worm south of the border, we've had to keep the ports closed to make sure that stays out, which, you know, thank the Lord we've been able to, against all models showing it would be here last year. But you marry that to this effort and the long-term infrastructure that we are building in order to mitigate this sort of thing from ever happening again. Marcia, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could tell you, we do believe that prices are going to start coming down this summer based on opening up the allotments, putting more money into midsize and smaller processors, incentivizing our ranchers and, you know, instead of slaughtering to keep their heifers, et cetera. I'm getting way into ag stuff now, but, we are hopeful that those prices will start coming down this summer, this fall. But again, this is a massive, complicated policy challenge that we're working to fight every single day and solve for.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Department of Commerce continues to work around the clock to implement President Trump's America First trade policy.
Testifying before a House subcommittee on appropriations, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
Under Section 232, the Commerce Department is taking action on steel, aluminum, copper, pharmaceuticals, autos, semiconductors, and investigating other sectors to protect, reshore, and revive manufacturing. These actions have led to multi-billion dollar commitments to reshore steel and aluminum manufacturing and restore American excellence in critical industries. In the first year of his second term, President Trump has dramatically reduced the trade deficit, lowering imports and increasing exports. Exports went to $3.4 trillion, which is a 6% increase from 2024. And in 2025, the trade deficit was the lowest we've seen in 16 years. I'm proud of the role I played in negotiating our most important trade agreement, including the largest deal ever done, which was our trade deal and investment deal with the European Union. BIS is working hand in hand with the Department of Health and Human Services. We've arranged historic agreements to lower drug prices for American consumers, negotiating most favored nation deals, and ensuring Americans pay the lowest prices for innovative medicines. As a result of these deals, additionally, we have secured over $400 billion in commitments to reshore pharmaceuticals and manufacturing in America, those key pharmaceuticals. The budget includes a $215 million increase to BIS above the 2026 enacted level, which supports the hiring of hundreds of new special agent law enforcement officials to address the theft of American technological leadership by bad actors. These officers are critical to protecting and defending America's innovation. In ITA, we are driving record foreign direct investment, cracking down on harmful foreign trade practices, and supporting our 1.3 million American jobs with export and investment deals. In 2025, ITA helped Boeing, Wabtec, and other major American companies secure a record $244 billion in contracts with foreign public buyers. This exceeds the $17 billion that the Biden administration did in its first year. The budget includes a $10 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for trade enforcement in ITA and $100 million for the United States Investment Accelerator. The budget slashes unnecessary wasteful spending at NIST and other groups and eliminates the manufacturing extension partnership, which I'm sure we will talk about. At the USPTO, we are rapidly modernizing and leveraging technology to cut classification prep dramatically. We want to get rid of the massive backlog that we had and do a much better job. And finally, we have launched a new era of modernization of NOAA, where we're in the process of transferring the agency's IT system from a decades-old hardwired technology to the modern distributed cloud. This update will improve our forecasting capabilities, transform the way our forecasters do their jobs, and will make Americans safer. The budget also includes a $135 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for NOAA shipbuilding and our improvement of unmanned systems programs. For far too long, our nation was mired in status quo, leaving American consumers and producers alike with unfair, poorly implemented trade deals, outsourced jobs, and paltry investments that failed to meet our country's potential. President Trump is committed to ushering in a golden age of domestic commerce and bringing jobs back to the United States, and that's exactly what he's done in his first 15 months of this administration. I look forward to working with you as the department continues to spur economic growth and secure unprecedented prosperity for the American people.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.